Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Guys, age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to LCB Season 2, Episode 23. It's Ken Jack, and I'm joined by Chris Castellani. You know, I've been having a lot of trouble with pronunciation lately. You know, I don't know if you listen to our Twitter spaces, but we have a guy from AJ's from Holonet Marauder, and I've said the word Holonet Marauder wrong like 5,000 times during the spaces. And now I can't pronounce like a simple fucking last name like Castellani.
Well, Castellani is not that simple of a last name. You're forgiven for that. I've had it butchered way worse than what you just said, so don't worry
really?
About it. Oh, no, okay. I've heard Castellini. So you're totally fine with them.
Castellini sounds kind of cool. It sounds like a pasta type, actually.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, no Jeff today. He is out doing a I think like a NASCAR thing with Large.
Yeah, he's living it up.
Yeah, LA, yeah. Awesome. Wish we were in LA as well, man. It looks fun. Obviously, the Super Bowl and all that stuff too. They're doing a lot of content. I think they have the Dozen Live tournament they're going to be doing there as well. So if you're out there and you haven't gotten tickets, you're probably too fucked now. It's too late, but you can at least like watch along from the sidelines or whatever. Anyway, we're going to be reviewing today two fantastically equally good movies, Jackass Forever and Moonfall. But before we get into that, let's say a quick word from our sponsor, Allbirds. All right, look. It sucks running when it's cold out. Your shoes get wet, you get wet, it's cold, your lungs burn, all that stuff. It stinks, but you still have miles to log, still have goals to meet. You can keep your feet warm and dry with the weather-repellent wool dash or mizzle shoes from Allbirds. Look, they're awesome. They sent us a pair. I really, really like mine personally. I gave them a try, actually, I think 3 days ago, right after that winter storm. Feels great. None of the water got through and made your socks wet because there is literally no feeling worse in this entire world than having wet socks. And not only can you keep your feet dry, but you can also kind of satisfy your environmental consciousness, so to speak. Allbirds printed the wool dash or mizzle's carbon footprint right on the shoe, so you know the impact on the planet. Then they offset the carbon footprint to zero by making it a carbon neutral product. Allbirds built the wool dash or mizzle using natural materials to have a low environmental impact so that you can break a sweat without breaking the planet. This winter, keep your feet cozy and dry with the Allbirds Wool Dasher Mizzles. Discover your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's allbirds.com. Thank you to Allbirds. Before we get back into our movie reviews, obviously we're going to do some news. The first thing is one of the funniest trailers, I think, or most shocking trailers I've ever seen. And it's the trailer for Pinocchio, a true story. A new animated movie about Pinocchio, which stars Pauly Shore, John Heder, or Heder, I guess. I never knew how to actually say it.
I think it's Heder. Me too. I believe it is, yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard someone actually say his name. They just say Napoleon Dynamite.
I was about to say that too, that everyone just calls him Napoleon Dynamite, yeah.
Exactly. And also Tom Kenny, who obviously voices SpongeBob, among many other things. What did you think of this trailer? It was so fucking shocking to me.
You know what's weird is like this is back-to-back weeks we've talked about a Pinocchio trailer. Yep. And the Del Toro one, we were all like, all right, okay, it could be good. I'll say up front, I would be stunned if this gets like a major theatrical release. I mean, it stars Pauly Shore and John Heder. Like, but even beyond that, I've seen commercials for The General that had like better animation quality. I expected Shaq to show up at some point during this thing. Like, it's that. It also speaks – I also have a pet peeve of mine when movies have a true story somewhere in their like mm-hmm. caption. Like Pinocchio isn't a true story. It's Pinocchio. So now, dude, this looks, yeah, it's shocking. I can't imagine it'll get some theatrical release. Really, what it looks like is like an asylum movie. Like for people mm-hmm. who don't know who the Asylum is, they're the ones who do like Snakes on a Train, like Transmorphers, like those ripoff Hollywood, you know, movies. It looks like that, except it has Pinocchio attached to it. So yeah, I mean, it's a really bad trailer, but it's one of those so bad it's good trailers where it feels like a meme when you're watching it. So I mean, you know, I'm sure it'll be awful, but inoffensively awful.
Hearing the Pauly Shore come in as Pinocchio's voice was one of the most bizarre moments I think I've ever had watching a trailer. And I don't know if you noticed, we actually interviewed Pauly Shore a while back. Easily a bottom three interview we've ever done. It was so funny, like how bad it was.
Man,
it was
I've terrible. Heard that a lot about him too, where like he's, I don't think he's a bad guy, but I just don't think like, well, okay, you already said it wasn't a great interview. He's just not very talented at all. Like he's never really done anything. Like I keep waiting for the moment where he has like one of these late career turnarounds where you go, oh man, maybe like I just underestimated that guy. I just don't think he has it, like from a charisma standpoint. So yeah, I think it only fits that he's doing Pinocchio, a true story.
You know, I think that actually makes sense too, because one actor who we recently saw do that sort of turnaround was like Simon Rex. Like Simon Rex, yeah. Like his early stuff is like all this like goofball stuff that like you don't really think there's much past the surface level to that. And like he fucking turns around and gives us Red Rocket, which is amazing. Yeah. Great emotional, dramatic tour de force and funny. Tour de force. But yeah, I looked up and we're into this movie. It's directed by this guy named Vasily Rovinesky, who's basically like the Brad Bird of shitty Russian animated movies. If you go look at his filmography, it's all these movies like Large Bull or something like that, or Big Brother Man, or like all these weird and usually animal related animated movies, and they all look god awful.
Is it possible that this was a movie that was made overseas that has since been like post converted into like with American, not American subtitles, but like redone with American like dubbing?
So on the IMDb page for it, it just says English voice for all of the guys in there, so it's very possible that it was just like it done originally in Russian and then they just kind of like moved around or whatever they had to do to get the English voices. So very possible. It does, the voices did look kind of off in the trailer too. So
I wasn't sure if that was just the animation, you know, going mm-hmm. back to, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on Pinocchio, but you guys brought up Benigni last week.
Yeah.
And you guys said like, oh, Benigni made a Pinocchio film in like 2019. And I went back and looked, Roberto Benigni has been in a part of three different Pinocchio movies.
Really? I had no idea.
Well, do you remember in 2003, this was like what, 6 years after he won his Oscar? Mm-hmm. He made a Pinocchio movie that I believe has 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like he played Pinocchio and it got a mainstream release. What happened is I think he made it in Italy. And then because he won the Oscar, they said, oh, we can make bank on this. So they redubbed all the Italian audio with Breckenmeyer as the voice of Pinocchio.
No way.
Dude, 2002, I believe it was. And, I think he's gone on to be a part of two different Pinocchio movies since then. That's why like he never had another like mainstream American hit, was because he had a 2002 Pinocchio movie that I believe to this day does not have a positive review on Rotten Tomatoes. It was a huge, huge flop. I don't know how it did overseas. Maybe it translated differently overseas, but when we were talking about that last week, I'm like, I feel like he's been a part of other Pinocchio projects. Maybe he's just going to keep doing that until something hits. But yeah, I wanted to bring that up from a week ago, because that was wild to me.
The voice cast of this is unbelievable. Glenn Close, all of the Monty Python guys, Kevin James, Topher Grace, Queen Latifah, Regis Philbin was in this. What the fuck, man? That's insane.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. That's crazy.
And it was their entry for best foreign language film at the Oscars too. It was Italy's. No fucking way. That's so funny. And Eddie Griffin, I love Eddie Griffin. Cheech Marin, Jim Belushi. Wow, dude, how did they get all these people involved with this? Well, the answer is he has an Oscar like from two years ago.
He was 5 years removed from the Oscar, so yeah. This was like his next big, you know, step into American cinema, and they just had a bunch of American actors dub it. Yeah, no, that was I forgot about that when we were talking about it.
That's insane. God just fucking loves Pinocchio. I can respect that. Italian legend.
Yeah.
So, well, not Roberto Benigni, but also Roberto Benigni, but mostly Pinocchio, Italian legend.
Yeah.
So the next thing we have up is the penultimate episode of Book of Boba Fett. I want to talk spoilers, so I'm just going to say right now, if you do not want to get Book of Boba Fett chapter 7 or 6, sorry, spoiled, just don't listen to this part, because we're going to talk a little bit about it. We did a lot about it on the Twitter space last Wednesday night. But Chris, we didn't get a chance to hear your thoughts. What did you think of the episode?
You know, I haven't been watching, and I feel shitty about that. I got to get caught up, and I know what's going on in it. Like, I know what's happening. Mm-hmm. I think that based on what I've gathered, and I'm going to keep it short, because again, I haven't really been watching. I think that this season of Boba Fett is falling in kind of a similar vein to the first season of Mandalorian, where I'll contend the first 5 episodes of season 1 of Mando are just like, okay, like they're not amazing. They're just so. And even one of them, the one that had Bobby Cannavale's son, was just like bad.
That one. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden in the last 3 episodes, like they just turned it on. I think that you have a similar thing here with Boba Fett. So I do, you know, and I apologize to the audience. I really do want to go back and watch it. I'm not providing a ton of insight, but I think that one thing that is cool and does excite me is the fact that they're creating a cinematic universe, but not for cinema. They're doing it mm-hmm. on a smaller scale where they're connecting Mando to Boba Fett. And maybe the timeline doesn't add up, but I'm sure they're going to try to do something that connects, you know, Obi-Wan to whatever series they do next. And I do think that is intriguing. I still contend there's a bit of oversaturation, but I do think that it's cool that it seems like there's a creative voice and a creative vision, which I think you could make a strong argument was not there for the sequels, especially after Force Awakens. So, you know, good on the people who are enjoying this. I really do need to go and, you know, take some time to watch it.
Yeah, people have been getting kind of pissed off because, like, I saw like a joke where it's like, yeah, big guest star appearance in the last episode of Book of Boba Fett. At Boba Fett will actually appear. These last 2 episodes are right. Mostly Mandalorian episodes.
Right.
But I think it's one of those things where, like, as long as what I am watching is entertaining, I really don't care. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's people who are like, I feel like almost like a phony outrage about it, not seeing Boba Fett. Like, you're loving the episode, aren't you? So, like, what is there to complain about? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all going to wrap up. It's all a big connected synergistic franchise. I don't find anything really worthwhile complaining. They did introduce my favorite character from the animated series into this episode, Cad Bane. And I was watching the episode at 6 a.m. I jumped out of bed when I saw him because he's like that much of an influential character in the Clone Wars, and saw a couple other great people in this episode as well. But that the Cad Bane moment really made me jump out of my chair. And you know how this is one of the ultimate examples of how fucking like how big of like petulant baby Star Wars fans are and never satisfied Star Wars fans are. All these people were complaining like, oh, he doesn't look enough like Cad Bane. Oh, his face is too big. Blah, blah, blah. It's like they just gave you a character you've been begging for forever, and all you can do is bitch about it. They are unbelievable. No, like we talk about it all the time as Star Wars fans, like that nobody hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans. They are the worst with this shit.
I have a question about that though, because I feel like that doesn't exist. I'm sure maybe in smaller scales, but in any other fan base, I feel like that doesn't exist. I was talking to somebody but I was watching a video where I think it was Cosmonaut, Variety Hour talked about that. Like Hugh Jackman physically does not look much like Wolverine. And in a lot of aspects doesn't act much like Wolverine. Wolverine is really short in the comics. You know, he's, you know, kind of. Yeah. Right. But, and yet, to me, if somebody else ever plays Wolverine, it's going to be weird. Like, I associate Hugh Jackman with, and nobody complained at the time about it. I really wonder why it is that Star Wars fans, and I love Star Wars fans, like, they're great. I love Star Wars to death, but like, why they have that like butting of heads when it comes to certain characters and certain portrayals. Like, I think there's like this territorialness where they just feel a need to want to see things that are, you know, as, you know, faithful as possible. It is strange. And I think, look, it makes for a lot of fun discussion, and I love Star Wars fans no matter what, because I myself am a huge Star Wars fan. But it's weird to me that we've seen other universes create characters and create storylines that are not necessarily faithful to the previous source material, and yet nobody really complains about it. It's very interesting to me.
Yeah, or at least that they like usually get over it. Like people complain like crazy when Heath Ledger was cast as the Joker.
Right.
People, when they had Daenerys show up and she didn't have purple eyes, they complained like crazy. Like yeah. There's so many instances like that where at the initial reaction was very shitty, like, or at least very complainy. And then like it kind of fell away when it turned out that it was good despite whatever the adaptation.
Yeah. And we're, like, we're about to get that again with Pattinson as Batman. Like,
exactly.
I don't think the backlash was as bad with him as it was for like Ben Affleck was another one. And I think those movies kind of stink, but like Ben Affleck was good. He was good as Batman, but you got those people who are like, I don't want to see this. This isn't my version. And look, I get it in terms of fandom, but you got to understand that these guys go through like huge processes just to like get a callback. Like there are those exceptions, but for the most part, when somebody gets cast in a role, it's because they went through like a ton of auditions and callbacks just to like be the finalist for that role. Like in general, these casting directors know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good example of this too. Was someone had a reverse Wolverine, which was when Tom Cruise played Jack Reacher. Fans of the book Jack Reacher were nuts because like Jack Reacher was supposed to be huge, and like obviously Tom Cruise is kind of like short, but they went ballistic about that. Now they have the new Reacher series with Thad Castle, who's like 6'5", 300 pounds, and now everyone's like, yeah, this is great, even though the show's like not that great.
Yeah,
they're probably gonna love it just because it's more faithful. Which by the way, that show is basically just like a dressed up Burn Notice, and I love it. Love everything about that.
Oh, it's, is it? You see, I never saw the second one. The first Jack Reacher movie was like substantially better than I felt like it had any right to.
Yeah,
and a big reason for it, honestly, was Tom Cruise is like kind of fucking awesome in it. Like he really kind of kicked a lot of ass. So yeah, I mean, it's a prime example of like you never, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. Like adaptations are adaptations, and sometimes they can work out for the better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, I know the author hated the fact that Tom Cruise got cast in it too, but sometimes the author can be wrong about something. That's like Stephen King hates
The Shining.
The Shining, right? Yeah. He despises it. He's like, yeah, it's like a fancy car with no engine. It's like, dude, it's like one of the best horror movies ever made in history. Like, what are you talking about?
He hated it so much, he made a mini series in the 90s, like adapting, and it's awful. It's terrible. So boring. Like, it's, yeah, sometimes changes can work for the better. They really can.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes the creator can be wrong about their work, kind of like the GIF, the guy who made GIFs, he calls it GIFs. Like, he's just wrong. I'm sorry.
Right. Hard,
GIF stands for graphic interchange format. It's a hard G. I'm sorry. He's just wrong.
Yeah.
Next thing we have up is that they officially announced that the Obi-Wan Kenobi series is going to be released in May. I don't have a ton to say about, but like, I am obviously super excited about that beyond being able to see Ewan McGregor back in the robes or whatever, because he was, I would say if you had to pick out what the singular best thing about the entire prequel trilogy was, I would say it was Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan.
Had to be.
And then getting to see him back in on screen is sick. Obviously Hayden Christensen back involved again. I'm very pumped up to see what this does.
It's really ironic because we just brought up how Star Wars fans can't agree on anything, and yet everyone in the prequel trilogy was like, you know what, Ewan McGregor was pretty good. And I really hope this works. It's ironic because I feel like this has been delayed a bunch. Like, man, I swear they announced this like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And then when they just said, oh, by the way, the Obi-Wan series comes out in May, I was like, shit, that's soon. Like, out of nowhere, it's like, oh, no, now it's really rolling. I really hope this works because outside of the Star Wars stuff, you know, I'll unconditionally love Star Wars regardless. But I just like Ewan McGregor, and I like him in that role, and I really hope this works for him. I mean, his career is doing fine, but it's just like, I really think that he is kind of the last, like, the vestige of, like, the prequels that everybody really, like, is backing and is in support of. So I hope it does a good job. I hope it does well, and I hope he's good in it. So I'm very intrigued by it. Like, Boba Fett was, you know, I have kind of different taste when it comes to Star Wars. I guarantee I will watch every episode of this. Like, I really want to see what direction they take this, because I think that is a very interesting part of the Star Wars saga is, like, there's 17 years where there's not a lot of gaps that have been filled in that, like, aspect. So I want to see what Obi-Wan was up to during that time post, you know, episode 3. I really hope it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. All we know is that at some point his name gets turned into Ben, and that's really it. I think there's like a couple different stories they can go, like a couple different directions they can go in with it. But again, super happy to see Ewan back in the role. Now it's weird because like him and Natalie Portman and even Sam Jackson, like a lot of other people from Star Wars escaped and went on to have like great careers. Hayden Christensen just isn't one of them, and I don't think it's 100% his own fault.
No, I never blame him for it.
Yeah, the writing is just horrible in those movies. And that was the sequel trilogy is obviously not sequel trilogy. The prequel trilogy is just a great example of when a director is just never told no, and his lines that he gave Anakin and Padme were terrible. And I mean, I think him getting another chance to step back and be Darth Vader again, even if it's just seeing him in, or we're going to see him in the mask or flashbacks, whatever. Like, I love that. And anything that he can do to get involved, because he's one guy too, where like, he doesn't miss a con really. Like, he shows up and he like pays his dues to Star Wars fans forever. That's more than you can say for a lot of people involved with
him. He's had a really good attitude about the whole thing. Like, I'm at best is another one where like, I'm at best made a whole video where he's like, I literally, and this is not even a joke, like, he's like, I basically nearly killed myself after like the hate I got. And now he's like, showing up to cons and like hosting game shows and like, you know, good for him. That's great. It's weird. I put the Star Wars prequels in the same camp that I put the Twilight movies, where I don't blame any of those actors for their performance. Like, Robert Pattinson is an amazing fucking actor, and he's not good in Twilight. Kristen Stewart might win an Oscar this year. Like, and she's not good in those movies. I think Hayden Christensen, the biggest difference between him and Samuel L. Jackson, Natalie Portman, and Ewan McGregor, is he didn't have the opportunities like beforehand to prove like his craft. Now he is in one of my 10 favorite movies of all time, which is Shattered Glass. So I like, anytime people are like, that guy can't act, I'm always hesitant. I'm always like, no, watch this. He's great in it. So I hope he gets like a little bump, a little comeback with that. I think it would be a nice little nostalgic like turnaround. And if the series is good, you know, that's all that matters. But I am really looking forward to this.
Yeah. Me too. We had a trailer for A24's After Yang. Yeah. It's like a new kind of sci-fi movie. It stars Colin Farrell, Jodie Turner-Smith, Justin H. Min. It should be in theaters on March 4th. It's about, in the near future, a family reckons with questions of love, connection, loss, and after their AI helper unexpectedly breaks down. The trailer, very A24-ish. As far as it goes, all the palette and all that shit is very there. And I know they're just a distributing company. It's not like they're sitting there making the movie, but like, they pick which ones that they're going to be distributing, right?
Yeah.
Like that, and it has a very A24 look to it. I really like the idea of like any movie where they try to like sort of explain what it is to be human. Like Ex Machina, I think, is a good example of that. Like, it kind of gave me vibes of that sort of thing. I love that as an idea. I think Colin Farrell is a very underrated, actually great actor. And like, it's weird. Like, in my whole childhood, I always saw him as like an action star almost. Like, he's like, oh yeah, the guy from like SWAT or some shit. Like,
yeah, phone booth. And yeah.
Yeah. And like, he's not like, I don't think of him as a classically good actor, but like, he's in over the last like 5+ years, he's done a lot of like smaller projects and like gotten his shine. And man, dude, he's been killing it. And I'm excited to watch this.
You know what's weird is he never really went away, but I think that 2022 is going to be like kind of the return of Colin Farrell. When I look at the projects he has coming up, you know, I mean, we don't know how good the Batman is, but the one thing we can say is like, he is so unrecognizable as the Penguin. And I guarantee you a lot of people are going to take notice of that. And this looks, you know, A24 does a good job with their trailers of giving you just enough. So, like, I do think this will be good. A24 is, you know, I know, like you said, it's a distributing company, but they don't have a lot of bad movies. I mean, even their movies that can be boring or can be kind of so-so have a lot of merit to them. I weirdly find myself rooting for him because he's had a very successful career, but I think that he's finally found, like, his niche with movies, where I feel like he had this stretch where he was really trying to be the action star. It was a long period of time. It probably ended with like Total Recall in 2012. And now it's like, okay, now I want to be an actual dramatic actor. It could be. I'm not going to say that he's going to be this successful, but similar to McConaughey, where McConaughey got to a point where he's like, I'm just going to do dramas. I just want to do roles that stretch me as an actor. We might be getting that with Colin Farrell, and more power to him. I think that's really cool. I think the movie, you know, when does it come out? Is there a specific,
March 4th, I believe, is the date.
Oh, this. Okay. So that's not exactly Oscar time, but I think so. It comes out the same day as the Batman then. So he's going to have a busy
pretty few good weekend.
There. Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Matthew McConaughey too, because he actually did obviously True Detective as well. And he was probably the best part of that entire season of True Detective, which was very underwhelming.
Yeah. Right, well, that's right. He was in season 2, right? He was in the second.
Yeah.
I think he's being more selective with his projects, because I'm sure he's set for life. Like, he was, he, like early 2000s, Colin Farrell was like huge. Like he did a bunch of like big, like high profile stuff. Like he kind of got, I've brought this up before. He kind of had Shia LaBeouf syndrome where he was a little bit too overexposed because he was in SWAT, Phone Booth, Daredevil, like a he was in Troy or wait, no, was he in Troy or Alexander?
No, not Troy. Alexander. Alexander like, Troy was cool.
Right, right. Yeah. He was in a bunch of stuff back to back to back. And now like, it seems like everything's come full circle. So good for him, man. I hope things go well for him.
He's in one of my favorite movies ever, in Bruges. And he's actually
fucking In Bruges is so good.
Great movie. And he's actually doing another Martin McDonagh movie, The Banshees of Something, which I think is coming out in a few years. And he has the Ron Howard Thai cave rescue movie coming up at some point too. I'm not sure when it is.
He's gonna be they're doing a Penguin spinoff too with he's set now. We're gonna be seeing a lot of him, I feel like, over the next several years.
Exactly. He's crushing it. Before we get to the next piece of news, I want to thank another one of our sponsors, Manscaped. Today I am super excited to announce that Manscaped launched their ultra premium collection. Believe it or not, it's for your not so private parts. I'm talking about a leveled up hygiene routine with your favorite manly scent. This is an all-in-one skin and hair kit for the everyday man that covers you from head to toe. Literally, Manscaped is trusted below the waist, but now you can trust them with everything else. You all know about the Lawnmower 4.0. We talk about it. We basically, I think, advertise for every single lawnmower iteration there has been. But, you know, their advanced skin-safe technology helps reduce the cuts to your delicate areas. But now you can enhance your private grooming routine with the Ultra Premium Collection. This includes Manscaped Premium Deodorant, not for your balls, it's for your armpits. It dries clear, aluminum-free, and smells like their signature scent. It also comes with the Hydrating Body Spray. If you have tattoos or issues with dry skin, this is really, really good to keep your skin feeling moisturized, smooth, and fresh. There's a body wash. They'll lather you up with their infused aloe vera and sea salt shower gel. A 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. Clean up your scalp with one easy step, plus a free gift. A 3-pack set of lip balm that's made with ingredients such as vitamin E, peppermint, eucalyptus oil, and more to keep those chappers feeling moist. That's 4 products plus a gift in the Ultra Premium Collection. Amazing score. All of these products are cruelty-free, paraben-free, vegan-free, and dye-free. Sorry, not vegan-free. Vegan-friendly is what we're looking for here. The best ingredients with zero compromise. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with code LIGHTS at manscaped.com. The power of attraction is now in a bottle, thanks to Manscaped. Thank you to Manscaped. We had our first trailer for the Tiger King series, Joe vs. Carol, starring John Cameron Mitchell and Kate McKinnon as Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin. I cannot believe that this is actually happening, because like I think we kind of talked about it probably a long time ago when they first announced they were doing a series on this, but like it is insane that they are going to go back and do this 2 years after Tiger King came out. Like when a kind of like a reactionary comedy show like an SNL whatever parodies this stuff, it's almost always bad, but at least it's like they're striking when the iron's hot, and like it's so far past when this was relevant and when people gave a shit about it. And the fact that like this is something to, like Kate McKinnon has really just went straight down my leaderboards of people I really thought was funny. Right. Like,
man, I'm with you 1,000,000%, but keep going.
Yeah. She just like, when she first came on SNL, she was like early 2010s. Yeah. And like, I thought she was funny. They used her well and all that stuff. And then they kind of like turned her into this like dancing bear of shitty impressions and like, just like weird kooky characters that like the only characteristic to them is that they're loud. And like that became all of the characters that she got cast in movies too. Like obviously Ghostbusters, she did that really terrible spy movie with Mila Kunis. And like she just does these unbearably bad characters. And we know she's funny. She's just like everything she picks and like everything she gets cast to do, it's just like let her do something other than that character. And those, was it the Verizon commercials too?
Yeah.
Oh my God. They're miserable, man. It's terrible.
First of all, I forgot Nick Cage dropped out of this. So when I watched this trailer and John Cameron Mitchell showed up, I'm like, why are you here? So I completely forgot. So that was my bad. I'm with you 100% on Kate McKinnon. Kate McKinnon to me is Kristen Wiig 2.0, where like Kristen Wiig in the early to mid or mid to late 2000s was in every SNL skit, and you watched her and you're like, God, she's so good. She's so talented. She's such a star. And she then proceeded to take roles that like, where she just played those same characters over and over again. I don't, for the record, I don't think this looks bad, but I also think that season one of Tiger King was really riveting. I also think it was total lightning because it dropped literally right when COVID hit. And everyone was at home and it became this huge deal and it was very funny. And like, I mean, the amount of memes that came out of Tiger King, like good, like legitimately funny memes were great. I don't think it has sustainability. Like, I don't think these people are likable or funny enough to make series out of and movies out of. And I mean, that's been proven by the fact that like season two of Tiger King has like a 20% on Rotten Tomatoes or something. Like, people really did not enjoy it. So even though it's only been 2 years, this feels rehashed when you watch the trailer, and maybe it'll be good. And I'm rooting for Kate McKinnon, and I hope, you know, I hope this is solid, but yeah, I'm very split on it. I hope it works. I hope it's good, but I don't know. I might give it a watch for an episode or two, but I'm really not crazy about this. I think they could do better.
Yeah, actually, I thought the guy who John Cameron Mitchell, he does look a lot like Joe Exotic, and the what do you call it? The Nick Cage one you're talking about was Amazon, and I think they shelved it because they were like, yeah, no one gives
okay,
a fuck about
all right.
It. And Amazon was like, we're not making it because no one cares about Tiger King. And in meantime, Peacock was like, yeah, fuck it. We're going to go for it.
Okay. All right. Then I fucked that up because I thought this was the series that he was attached to. And good. Like, there should not be two Joe Exotic series going on at one time. Like, then they made the right decision. And Nick Cage is kind of busy now. Like, he's been doing a bunch of shit. So, yeah, I hope this is good. But I can't help but feel like they're just milking it a little bit too much, which is what happens in Hollywood. That's the way things are. But yeah.
Yeah. It's just, again, just bizarre because no one gives a shit about Tiger King anymore. It's such lightning in a bottle and like no one had anything else to watch. And now we're going to Peacock series about it. And that's the only other reason I won't be watching is because it's on Peacock. And I'm not getting Peacock. It's just not happening.
Like, yeah.
Don't want to be mean. And if you're some of a listener and you work for Peacock, it's just not happening. Channing Tatum said that he felt traumatized after his Gambit film fell through. He said, like, I haven't been able to see any of the Marvel movies. It's just too sad. And Gambit, I don't know if you're aware of this, Chris, like a very deep part of the lore in the LCB podcast is just wanting to get Channing Tatum his Gambit movie.
Yeah.
He wanted it for so long. And he obviously just never had a chance to get it, which it stinks. But it's another thing where it's like, how interesting enough is Gambit past the surface level as far as getting a standalone movie? And like for him, it kind of sucks because like maybe it is there, but just like it never worked out because obviously the timeline of Fox getting bought and all that stuff, like it just didn't really work out for him. It stinks, but like I don't know how much I'm dying for a Gambit series.
I have two thoughts on this. And first of all, I agree with you where like I think that we take sometimes these characters that look really cool and we try to make them like into movies or series or franchises. Now, I don't know, maybe I'll get ripped for this. I never found Deadpool that interesting until his movie. Like, I think the movie Deadpool, both of them, are actually better than the character is written in the comics. Two quick observations. One, this does make me sad because I love when actors are playing comic book characters and they really care about the characters. Like, you know, there's certain guys who take these roles and do a great job, but sometimes you have like a Tom Holland or an Andrew Garfield, or you know, the guy who played Shang-Chi, Simu Liu, who's like really knowledgeable about the character, really passionate about doing the most with it. It's clear you kind of had that with Channing Tatum, and it fell through. And so I do feel bad for him, as successful as he's been. Like, he's really talented. I think he would have done a great job. But secondly, we talk a lot about cinematic universes that fail, like the Dark Universe is the big punching bag, obviously. And people talk about the Cloverfield universe or even the DCEU, like fumbled the bag for a long time. People really overlook how massive of a failure X-Men Origins Wolverine was.
So bad.
When that movie came out, they had plans for X-Men Origins Magneto, X-Men Origins Gambit, X-Men Origins Deadpool, and only Deadpool got made, and that was solely because Ryan Reynolds like leaked the footage online.
He,
like, 7 years
he willed it into existence, right, and right, only because they fucked him up so bad in right, X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Right, it's that was gonna be this huge universe, and Fox screwed it up so badly that we are left with a lot of, you know, what could have been, and it makes me sad because I like Channing Tatum a lot. I think that movie could have been good, but I think it was, it got to a point where you fell into limbo where after really, after Days of Future Past, Fox's X-Men had no idea what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that they were kind of in limbo for several years. And what really sucks is at some point, the X-Men or the mutants are going to be brought into the MCU, and we're probably going to have Gambit played by another actor, which is too bad because I think Channing Tatum would have done a really, really good job. It's a bizarre story, but just one of those things where the timing just never lined up.
It almost sounds like you're saying Channing Tatum, and I actually like that name better. I think it's just going through my headphones.
Yeah, I always slur it. Yeah, yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. It's just one of those things. I think specifically Gambit, I think would be so cool of a character to have like a smaller amount of screen time where it's like more emphasis and like he can pack more of a punch and like a consolidated one versus like it being spread out. Because like I do think he's cool, but I think he'd be cooler in doses.
X-Men Origins Wolverine is awful, but like Taylor Kitsch in that is like okay. Like you came out of that being like, well, Gambit could be cool, I guess. Yeah. And yeah, I know I'm kind of with you where I feel like he might work better as a supporting character.
Yeah, I think the one thing I walked away from that movie thinking of as far as Gambit goes is that Taylor Kitsch is just not the right fit for that character at all.
He had a terrible accent the entire time.
Bad.
I mean, we could do an entire podcast about like the career arc of Taylor Kitsch and like how much like he was
another True Detective season two guy.
Yeah, like how he was just destined to be the next big star, and everyone collectively just said, "No, thank you." Like it was
John
just
Carter, easy. All that shit just fell through. Thank
the
God.
Savages, Battleship.
Oh,
yeah,
Battleship is better than people gave it credit for, but still not good. Another Spider-Man news, Dakota Johnson is apparently almost cast now or nearing a deal to play Madam Web in a solo film for Sony. I didn't know a lot really at all about Madam Web before the news broke. Here's just a quick recap from Wiki. In the comics, she's depicted as an elderly woman with a disease and is connected to a life support system that looks like a spider web. Due to her age and medical condition, she never actively fought any villains. For that reason, sources say it's stressed, at least in this case, that the project could turn into probably something else. And they say that due to her sensory psychic powers, that she's essentially would be the Sony's version of Doctor Strange. And I think for me, again, I'm down for anything Spidey-ish they want to do. I think Dakota Johnson is a much better actress than she gets credit for. She kind of falls into that. We were talking about like the Twilight Zone actors. Sort. They should just call it, like the Twilight Zone actors, because like it's the people.
Wait, you mean Twilight actors?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It's like we should call them Twilight Zone actors, because like it's almost like an effect where like if you have actors and actresses in a shitty franchise, that becomes their sort of brand and they get stuck with it. And the same thing happens with 50 Shades of Grey. Like Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan in that movie, terrible, 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 terrible. And a lot of that just has to do with the fact they'd never had chemistry and the lines were bad, all that shit, the way they put the movies put together. Both of them since have been in projects outside of 50 Shades of Grey. We're great. Like we talked about Belfast. Jamie Dornan.
He's so good in that. He's great. Yeah.
Barb and Star and Vista Del Mar, Jamie Dornan crushes it. Like Dakota Johnson has been in a slew of projects over the last like I would say 5 years, and all of them she's been pretty fucking good in. Even that like the Bad Times at the El Royale.
She
was probably the best part of that movie. Like there's a lot of things where she's done, like they've all done it and they've just moved on and been better stuff. I think she could potentially be good in something like this, but the more I read about her being like this old woman things kind of doesn't really fit, right?
Yeah, I mean you're talking about like Dakota Johnson is just so hot. And so like the idea of like, we're going to make her an elderly woman on life support. Okay. I hope it's good. I do. I don't have any faith in Sony really. And yes, part of that is like the bane of my existence are the Venom movies. But at the same time, I don't think there's many comic book villains out there that are worthy of solo movies. Like I think the inherently that idea is kind of stupid. Like it's saying I felt that way about Venom, where like what makes Venom cool is when he can go up against Spider-Man. Now Joker worked, but Joker was all that's lightning in a bottle made by a really good filmmaker and an actor who was giving like one of the best performances I've ever seen. I don't think this idea of like we're gonna make five or six different solo movies and then maybe connect them to the MCU or connect them to some other universe is, I don't know. Like Morbius is like a D level Spider-Man villain, and now he has a $200 million movie. So like a solo film. I love Dakota Johnson. I think she's great. I think that, yeah, like you said, I think that she's proven herself to be really good in other movies, and I think she's incredibly talented, and I hope she kills this, and she's a very talented actress, so I'm sure she will, but I just don't have a lot of faith in the world building there. It seems like they're just throwing a ton at the wall. Like Aaron Taylor Johnson is Kraven the Hunter. Okay, Kraven the Hunter is one of my favorite Spider-Man villains. That would be cool if he was fighting Spider-Man, but on his own, I'm just kind of like, okay, what are we doing here? Like, is this going to work? We'll see.
What I get afraid of is with every villain story, and this includes Joker as well, like they kind of do this thing where like you know them as a classically bad guy, and like they can be a little bit three-dimensional, sure, but like usually it's like they're just the bad guy, and every bad guy movie does like the same thing where they build them up so that you have empathy for them when like you shouldn't, because like that just, you need that when you're watching a movie, you need to feel empathized like usually with somebody, and like if they were just pure bad you really wouldn't. And like that's, I prefer a villain story where like maybe we just can see someone who's actually evil, like just straight up. Like, I don't want to see like a outside factors being, you know, pushed into doing whatever they're doing. Like, have them be a fucking bad guy. I mean, even if we have to like not root for someone in the traditional sense, or if they're like not like an anti-hero like Deadpool or whatever, like you could just have someone be bad, and I'd actually like that. And the same thing with Kraven the Hunter as well. Which, like, we had interviewed Joe Manganiello a few times, and that was like his dream role. And then Aaron Taylor Johnson is super.
He would have been perfect. Yeah, would have been perfect. I know.
And absolutely perfect. I had said, I remember me and Robbie did a casting blog for the X-Men when the Fox deal first happened. I thought Aaron Taylor Johnson would be good Wolverine.
I think both of those guys would have been. Yeah. And I think he would have been really good.
He's strong. He's got, like, I think if you've ever seen the movie Outlaw King, he has a great crazy scream. And like that is like I think that's one of the things you really need now if you're going to play Wolverine. You know what I mean? Like, you know how just Hugh Jackman nailed that in every movie?
Forest scene in Logan when he's just calling so ass. Sidebar here. I think Logan is like one of the best movies of like the last like decade. Like, I actually, that movie is amazing. And the one thing we were talking about X-Men earlier, I can't, outside of Deadpool, I can't watch any other X-Men movie other than that, because it feels like fucking Sesame Street compared. Like, it really, it's such, the juxtaposition between that movie and every other X-Men movie is just bizarre to me. Like, it's just, it just exists on a completely different stratosphere.
I have it as my number four comic book movie of all time, only behind Guardians Into the Spider-Verse and Dark Knight, because Logan is amazing. You know what's crazy? They did that too. Is like, they fully went all hard, like hard R rating as far as like gore goes, finally. Mm-hmm. And like, and that's James Mangold too, just like understanding the character and like letting us get like the old man Logan storyline. But like the scenes were like Professor X like froze everybody, and like, what do you call it? He's fucking clawing his way through and like slow motion killing those dudes, like, and what's his name, Boyd Holbrook, all-time great X-Men villain, if you ask me. Like, so good. So many, everyone was great in that movie.
I'm surprised, and maybe they did and I missed it. That movie did get, people forget that movie got nominated for best adapted screenplay. Like, it was really well received. Hugh Jackman should have gotten like some, there should have been some sort of push for like him to get nominated for that, because that was his last performance and he's like amazing in it. One of my all-time favorite movies. I think that film just slaps.
I watched the Wolverine recently, which is also James Mangold, which is better, way better, it's than not bad. Wolverine.
It's not that bad, but it's you know, compared to Logan, it's, you know,
a couple great fight scenes in that, but there's one scene that it always sticks out to me. It's like the one scene where Yukio says like I saw the vision, like you die with your heart in your hand, and like he dies with, you know, X-23 or whatever in his hands. It's like, oh, that's a good sign off.
Yeah, good on James Mangold, man. Like, he planned that kind of two-part series out in advance, and
you understood it. Next thing we have is that Amazon released just a whole bunch of new posters for Lord of the Rings series, Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings guy. Even after watching some of these posters, I found a mirror and illegally downloaded Lord of the Rings Battle for Middle Earth 2, which is one of my favorite video games of all time. This is set, I know a lot of people still like, maybe they're like super keyed in on it. It's set like thousands of years before The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. I'll just give you the synopsis of it. It begins in a time of relative peace and covers all major events from the second age of Middle Earth, the forging of the Rings of Power, the rise of the Dark Lord Sauron, and the story of the island kingdom of Numenor, which is the last, and also the last alliance between elves and men. A lot of cool stuff there, a lot of stuff that you won't have like really tread over really with the Lord of the Rings trilogy. If you're a Lord of the Rings fan, you should be psyched up about this conceptually. In practice, we'll see. Amazon, I know, just kind of recently fucked up pretty bad a revered fantasy franchise in Wheel of Time. I know Wheel of Time fans of the books did not like that adaptation at all. So I think there's like obviously a little bit of fear there, but I mean it's Lord of the Rings, and I think that having one great trilogy that everyone adores universally, like, and one of them won tied for the most Oscar wins in history. Knowing that, and then also knowing what doesn't work with Lord of the Rings with The Hobbit, like you, I feel like they have a good blueprint of what they should mm-hmm. be doing. It's the most expensive series ever made. Like I have
really,
and yeah, dude, it's nuts. Like $25 million an episode. It's craziness.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay.
It's crazy. And I think I have a modicum of faith. Like big budget doesn't always mean great show, but I do trust that they know what doesn't work with Lord of the Rings. They know what does, and they have the budget to build this world the way it deserves to be built. So I'm very excited for this.
I'll keep it short, because I talked about Lord of the Rings a little bit a couple weeks ago, and like I'm not a fan. I just haven't. It's been a while since I've watched them. Is this an original story within that universe, or is it adapted from something that was written like a while ago?
It's adapted from existing stories from the Tolkien universe, because Tolkien has like beyond just the Lord of the Rings series, like he has the Silmarillion, he has like all these other things that like, just kind of tell the history of Lord of the Rings. I know I think it was adapted by somebody too, but I forget who. Somebody who's a Tolkien guy, I believe. I know, you know what? That's another great example of people not totally understanding it. The Tolkien family hated the Lord of the Rings movies, the first trilogy.
The Peter Jackson ones?
Yeah, they're like, oh, this is so unfaithful to JRR's work, like, or whatever. It's like, or J.R. Tolkien. Like, they just hated it. Another great example of the owner of the IP or whatever not understanding what makes it good, or owner of the thing not getting it. But yeah, so Lord of the Rings coming out, so hopefully sooner than later. That's gonna be like the once.
Is there a release date on it?
Not that I think it's, let me check.
23
Rings of Power. I feel like the next year would be the time. I also don't know. It's another crazy thing about it is they just don't have a lot of star power in it, which is okay.
The star power is the name Lord of the Rings. Like that's one of those things that you can, especially for TV, like as long as you have that title attached, it doesn't really matter who you cast.
That's the main character basically. It's scheduled to premiere in September 2nd, 2022. So we got a while of a wait, but still very pumped up for that. That's probably like my most anticipated new TV series to come out this year.
Yeah.
Before we get into our review of Moonfall, let's talk a little bit about Paint Your Life. Now that we can get out and travel and take vacations and all of that fun stuff, we want to celebrate some of our favorite times by turning our new memories into art. When I heard about paintyourlife.com, I thought that is an amazing idea for, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, all of that stuff. But I figured it must be expensive. But that's not the case. Traditionally, paintings are like, sometimes a little too expensive, stuff like that. But it's super affordable and the quality is amazing. If you want to give a really meaningful gift, you got to try it out. You can get a professional handmade portrait created from any photo at a truly affordable price, or combine photos of people or places you love into one painting. You get to choose from a team of world-class artists and work with them until every detail is perfect. Their user-friendly platform makes it really easy to order custom-made, hand-painted portraits in less than 5 minutes. It's super, super fast. I know it's like hard to get sometimes a very personal gift for someone, and like no one likes getting gift cards or any of that stuff, and this is super meaningful, it's personal, and it can be cherished forever. I got this for my girlfriend and I's anniversary this year, and I gotta tell you, she liked it way more than the sit-down chain restaurant gift card I got her last year. At paintyourlife.com, there's no risk. If you don't like the final painting, your money is refunded, guaranteed. And right now, as a limited time offer, get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% and free shipping. To get this special offer, text the word lights to 64,000. That's lights to 64,000. Text lights to 64,000. Paint your life. Celebrate the moments that matter most. Terms apply and they're available at paintyourlife.com/terms. Again, text lights to 64,000. Thank you to Paint Your Life. Let's get into Moonfall. We obviously interviewed Patrick Wilson for this, and you heard it in the last episode of LCB. We talked a lot about mostly the technical parts of the film, like as far as like CGI goes and like all the rigs he had to do. They did like all the space scenes. They basically had to build this computerized wire rig where like it would go through an entire sequence of movements and like it would do happen automatically. It wasn't like guys with pulleys or whatever. He's like, yeah. So like what kind of sucked about it is every time they started running it, they would have to run it all the way through the sequence. So like if they fucked up a take at point A, they wouldn't still had to go all the way to point Z. You know what I mean? Like it's like, yeah, that kind of sucked, but otherwise it was really fun. It's one of the things I can tell in the back of your voice. He did not like doing that at all. But yeah, this movie's very interesting. The moon is coming out of its orbit. It's going to crash into the Earth. We have a couple of astronauts that are trying to figure out what's going on, as well as a conspiracy theorist who turns out to be right about, for once, by the way. And that's it reminds me of a great Futurama bit where they discover that ancient aliens visited ancient Egypt, and that's why they had all those weird symbols and advances. And Fry says, great, regular, that's conspiracy theories one, regular theories a billion. And, like, that's right. Like the epitome of this movie to me.
Well, that's a Roland Emmerich and Michael Bay staple. They love their conspiracy theorists who turn out to be right. Like, you know, Michael Bay in all the Transformers movies, Woody Harrelson in 2012, and now what's the guy's name? John Bradley from they love putting that into their movies. They love nerds who turn out to be right about stuff.
Yep. I think the easiest way for at least, and we're going to do spoilers for both of these. I mean, it's a massive fucking destruction movie, and it's jackass. Like, I don't think it's worth holding too much back. I think it's easiest to kind of break down, at least for Moonfall, into pros and cons. As far as the pros go, I think the CGI was about as great as it could be. And I think that keeping protracted large scale destruction at a decent quality has to be like a big burden for any VFX department. Yeah. And I think they did a solid job there. The plot was stupid, but like never too stupid. And there were some legitimately funny lines, and I think most of them came from John Bradley. And I think like a lot of the funnier moments just came from him and the conspiracy theorist group or whatever it was. I thought that was pretty funny. The cons, there's a few of them. And I think the biggest problem I have with this movie, number one overall, is the pacing. It moves 500 million miles a minute and somehow still feels too long, which is crazy. Like it's a weird movie phenomenon that happens every now and then. The second is very overt product placement. You notice this at all? So
Firestone there were a few others that were
Firestone. I think they got millions from Lexus, from Elon Musk,
that's right,
and from Kapersky, which like weirdly had like both a banner ad, like a literal billboard in one of the scenes. And also like all their equipment in space was through Kapersky. I think it was kind of a waste of Michael Pena, this movie, but he got the bag, so I'm happy.
Completely. Yeah.
And I think just lastly, the plot wasn't really original. Like the idea that the Earth was seeded by, you know, protogenitors or whatever is like, it's very overused. And it just kind of combines that in Skynet from T2. I'm like, it's a movie now. And like that wasn't me too super original. And I think that it's one of those movies that I just describe as it is what it is. Like it fills a need for large scale destruction that a lot of people like me have. And that's great. And I think Emmerich is basically to this genre what like Scorsese is to mob movies. And like there needs to be a guy like that in basically every genre, right? Like there's no disaster artist better than him, basically, is what I'm saying. I'm not saying he's better than Scorsese. Trust me, you know. And but I think there's a degree to which you respect that. But also, I have a problem with Roland Emmerich kind of being a dick. And I'm sure you saw this. Did you see what he said after?
I was going to talk about it with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, let's just get straight into that then. Because he sat down with, I think it was Denis Geek, and he said that when he's talking about Moonfall, he's like, Marvel and DC and comics and Star Wars have pretty much taken over, and it's ruining our industry because no one does anything original anymore. This coming from Roland Emmerich is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And I'm sure you can expand.
Yes. Well, first of all, what's your rating for this?
My score on this is going to be, I think, I'm going to be landing on a 56. Moon landing on a
66. Wow, really? Okay, that is, I am surprised by that. I have this at like a 22. Like I thought this was basically dog shit. But before I get into my complaints, yes. Look, regardless of, you know, Martin Scorsese started this trend of like bashing Marvel movies, but Martin Scorsese, when he says something, it does hold weight because he's maybe the greatest living filmmaker. Like, I mean, he's made a billion good movies, billion great movies. His biggest problem was that he openly admitted to not seeing Marvel movies. So it's like, well, then your argument means nothing. Like, You can't criticize a film that you haven't seen or a series of films you haven't seen. I think Roland Emmerich is not a bad director. In fact, when Roland Emmerich directs movies he doesn't write, which like the Shakespeare movie, I don't believe he wrote. I don't believe he wrote The Patriot. I think he's actually pretty good. I think he's the worst writer ever. Like this movie, like, and the thing is, like, this is a guy who has made essentially the same movie over and over for like 25 years. And it's gotten watered down and watered down. Like, I do remember back in 2009, he said after 2012, okay, back in 2009, when he directed the movie 2012, he said, I'm done with these disaster movies. And I remember, and I actually kind of like 2012 because of that, because it felt like the big finale to this huge, like, these are my, like, everything got like buried in rubble or destroyed by a tsunami or blown up or destroyed by a volcano in that movie. Every historical monument got demolished. And I was like, okay, you know what? For like, in terms of disaster porn, this is like, okay. I'm not saying it's a good movie, but it's all right. This, man, I think you have an okay basic setup. And I'm not just saying this because you guys interviewed him. I like Patrick Wilson a lot. And I think Patrick Wilson should be like in more good movies because I think he's good. But man, the dialogue in this is so bad, dude. Like it's really poorly written, man. And what bothers me about Roland Emmerich, I said this in my YouTube review, but I'm going to state it here. He has said on multiple occasions, he wants to make big budget B movies. Okay. I kind of have a problem with that. Cause to me, it's not a B movie if you have $200 million behind it, but sure. Fine. If you want to make a B movie, go ahead. The problem is this movie is so convoluted with its plot structure and the characters. And dude, that whole subplot with Patrick Wilson's son.
Yeah, the unbelievable.
Didn't need to be there. You could have, that shouldn't have even been put in the script, let alone in the movie. And the film runs too long. The effects are good. They aren't like overwhelmingly good the way that they were in Independence Day at the time, or the way that I thought they were in 2012. Like they're fine. They're serviceable. But the one thing that's missing from this movie that, and I don't think Independence Day is really that good of a movie either, to be honest. Like it's fine. It's loaded with stereotypes, but it's an enjoyable movie. It's fine. It's fun to watch. But that movie had a sense of fun to this. This movie is very dull. It feels very generic. It feels like a movie, you know, made by a director who doesn't have much of a style. And the last like 20 minutes, it what's so bizarre to me is this movie should have a basic premise. The moon's about to crash into the earth. Spoiler alert. It ends with aliens like injecting John Bradley with artificial intelligence and basically has like a post-credit sequence that's not post-credits, which kind of leads into a sequel. And at that point, I'm like, go screw. Like, this thing's not getting a sequel. It completely bombed. Yeah, this will be, like, high up on my worst of the year. Like, I really did not enjoy this. You know, it has, what, like a 40% something on Rotten Tomatoes? So there are people who have gotten something out of this. But, yeah, I found it, like, almost insufferable. I was, I didn't think I would like it, but I was surprised at, like, how little enjoyment I got out of it, especially considering, like, there's talented people in it. Yeah, the Michael Pena thing is weird. Like, what is he doing? All right, like
he got the bag, and he's just like, I don't give a shit how much screen time you give me. That's fine.
And that's it. Roland Emmerich must be the nicest person in Hollywood because all his movies have really famous actors in them, and yet like anyone could have played that role that Michael Pena played, and he's in it for 5 minutes. One other thing too, but
it's the only main character that dies, by the way, which is hilarious. Yeah. Like the fucking moon crashes into the earth and he's the only guy that dies.
And the way he dies too is like very,
so
like,
lame.
It's like, he doesn't even get crashed by the moon. He just kind of like runs out of oxygen. He just suffocates and passes out. You don't even really see him die. It's just kind of implied, which like he clearly does. The other thing too, and maybe this is a hot take, but okay. Halle Berry won an Oscar like 20 years ago for Monsters Ball, which she's amazing in. I don't know if she's that good of an actress. She has some really like awkward line deliveries, and I don't really put that on her, but I didn't really buy it. Like John Bradley and Patrick Wilson, I think are good. And I think in general, their chemistry works pretty well, but she feels kind of out of place. And there's a whole subplot with her and her stupid ex-husband that like, why is it in this movie? What's the point of it? So yeah, I'm not a fan of it. People enjoy it. That's great. But, yeah, I could have done without Moonfall.
Yeah, there was a few little subplots, which, by the way, his kid was played by Charlie Plummer, who, like, I at one point I thought he was going to be one of those people that just got a million movie roles and that just never really materialized.
What else was he in? He looks really familiar.
He's one of those guys where, like, and I think that's the best thing you can describe Charlie Plummer is, like, you just see his face and you're like, oh, yeah, that guy. Like, he's in, like, a lot of, I feel like, series.
Was he in Diary of a Wimpy Kid? Did he play Roderick in Wimpy Kid?
Let's see. He did. I know he did All the Money in the World. Because that was one of, like, a sneaky okay movie. A couple of horror ones, right? Yeah, Lean on Pete. Yeah, a couple of series. Yeah, we did Boardwalk Empire. Great series, okay. By the way, Boardwalk Empire. A couple other things, Granite Flats. Looking for Last. Couple other things, but he's one of those guys where I remember Hollywood talked about him like he was going to be the next big thing, and that just never happened. And he was just a drain on this movie, and like that whole subplot was so stupid. And like that's one of the things where I feel like Roland Emmerich has kind of done that in a lot of his recent disaster movies, is like he wants to really inject a level of family into them when he does not need to. Like, you can make large-scale massive huge destruction and it just be about the people trying to stop it or the people trying to fix it, whatever. It doesn't need, like, think about every movie he's basically made. It's like The Day After Tomorrow was a father-son, right? Dennis Quaid and Jake Gyllenhaal. You go, let's do 2012. That was John
Cusack.
John Cusack and his whole family trying to escape. Like, fucking Godzilla. Even that, like, all these movies have, like, an element of family. Like, mostly the worst ones. And, like, you don't need that in order for the movie to succeed.
Right.
And
even that. One of his movies that goes overlooked with how bad it is 10,000 BC. Like, everyone.
Yeah, man.
That movie blows chunks, and even that, it wasn't father son, but there was a family element to that with. I think there was a brother relationship, and then there was the romantic relationship. Like, I think that his biggest problem is that he overcomplicates things. If he just kept this really simple, I think it could have worked. But as it is, it's kind of convoluted, and it's remarkably stupid.
They didn't even really explain why the Patrick Wilson and his wife got like a divorce or anything. Yeah, they just, you know, it didn't work out. It's like, why? Like, can you give us a little more of like a detail? Like, what did happen? Like, was it just they said because it was he got kicked out of NASA and like,
right?
Like, so what, was he a bad husband then when he got kicked out of or lost his job?
It's needlessly convoluted, because at the first 10 minutes, I'm like, okay, this might be all right, because I like the way they set up the redemption arc with him, you know, coming back to NASA. I'm like, okay, that's very basic. Good on you. Like, and then all of a sudden he has a wife who divorced him, and he has a kid who's in jail for a week. And then Michael Pena owns like a car dealership.
It's a Lexus dealership. Don't you forget?
Like, right. I forgot it was. Yeah. They had you're like, why take three subplots and merge them into one? Just have him be a disgraced astronaut. There's no problem with that. You know, you're not making The Usual Suspects here. You're just trying to make a basic, like, Hollywood, you know, disaster film. And they just shoveled a lot of unnecessary crap into it.
It's not one, but not two, but three family stories. Cause you also have Halle Berry and her ex. And also you have John Bradley and his like mom, who's inexplicably like 500 years old, even though John Bradley's looks like he's like 25. Like, which is very funny to me as well. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's the one thing I can do to describe this movie again is just to say it is what it is, where like you don't go into a movie like Moonfall expecting them to reinvent the wheel. Like, you go in, basically all you want is like large scale massive destruction, almost in the same way that you go into like a shitty horror movie, like a movie you know is not going to like be Get Right. Out or whatever. A movie you know is going to be like fucking Leatherface or some shit. Like, you know, it's not going to be like blow you away. It's just going to satisfy a need. And I think that's what Moonfall does to an extent. I agree with you though. It does get way too complicated in the way that it kind of executes the movie. And also, I mean, one of the funniest things I realized while watching it is like maybe the most unrealistic thing about this entire movie was how much the press actually gave a shit about astronauts. Like, the amount they covered him as like this national hero, like on the news every single day on the hour. It's like, I don't think they like it, this was forever after the accident, they still had him on the news every day. It's like, I do not think they give a shit.
That was weirdly, there were moments of it that reminded me of Don't Look Up. And like the most realistic part of Don't Look Up is the fact that like how long it takes for the media to give a shit about this. Like it really endeared me to that movie, was the fact that like Ariana Grande and Kid Cudi like sleeping with each other was had higher precedent than a comet that was about to destroy the Earth. Like, you kind of had similar elements with this, and yet somehow it's less realistic.
one of the funny things too was I feel like there's a lot of like really weird little moments in this where it's just like it doesn't totally click. But John Bradley like being like, no one's listening to me, no one's listening to me, and then like someone's being like, why don't you tweet it? And like him just tweeting it, a nobody, and picking up media everywhere is crazy. He'd be farting in the wind, like every other Twitter person with like 50 followers or whatever. Like it just goes nowhere. It doesn't matter. He's like, yeah, people were looking at my data that I posted. You post fucking four pages, panels of data on Twitter to no followers. Like you think you're getting fucking people talking to you back? Not a goddamn chance, dude. No way.
Like maybe I missed something, but they basically like resurrect a rocket in this movie. Like they just go into like a museum and find a rocket. And this is true. This is not exaggeration. They find a vandalized rocket that says fuck the moon on it. Mm-hmm. Like I am the farthest thing from an astronaut, but like they repair it about 10 minutes. Maybe that's a thing. I don't know. Maybe rockets are like cars where if you just dust them off and put a new engine in there, you can just shoot them off into space. But there's a lot of lapses in judgment in this. And look, I'm not expecting highbrow, you know, logic from this, but you got to meet me halfway a little bit here. It's like, you know, Independence Day had a lot of moments like that too, where it's just like, you're stretching this a little bit too thin. And really the biggest problem is that there's just no element of fun to this. I found it really dull for a large majority of the movie. It was just kind of going through the motions.
I think the best thing I can say is that it was entertaining in spots, but like, man, that third act really went off the wall. And like, there's just a lot of problems with it. And they obviously set themselves up for a sequel. I think they almost confirmed that they were doing it or whatever. Like Roland Emmerich said, he's really interested in doing another one, depending on
the performance.
Like, I can't imagine that people are going to be clamoring for
it. Made no money. It didn't make any money. There's no way.
It got destroyed by the next movie we're going to be reviewing, Jackass, in the box office. Right now, it's sitting at $19.5 million after a $146 million budget spent on it. Woof. That is tough. Even because Emmerich, the one thing you can say about him is like he usually makes like a decent amount of money. If he makes a shit pile, it doesn't matter. But if he's not making money, then
I don't like this movie. I also don't blame it bombing on him. Yeah. This to me, like, this felt like a Netflix movie. Like this felt like a fucking Cloverfield Paradox or something like that, where it's just like, I think this would have worked better going to a streaming service where probably more people would have seen it. You could take your breaks in the middle of it, and it probably would have, I bet they would have been more likely to get a sequel that way. And maybe it wouldn't surprise me if this does get a sequel, it might be something that goes to Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime. Cause I just don't think this is made for, you know, a theatrical release really.
It almost felt like a foreign sci-fi movie to me when I was watching it. Like, Space Sweepers or one of those other Netflix ones, like where it's just like there's a certain aura to SFX that are made out of the country where this kind of had that as well. But like, again, I think that they did well considering how much of this movie was done with a green screen and like the sheer volume of special effects needed. I think it was pretty solid. And it did like some of the things like the chase scene through the hangar I thought was cool. The actual setup of the moon structure I thought was decent. Like the little AI, what was really cool was I thought the hall, this is such a bizarre thing to point out as being good in a movie, but the hallway that they go down in the space station where it's like all lit up, almost like a Star Wars kind of hallway. Mm-hmm. I just love that little production shit. Like I just thought it looked cool. And in retrospect, I think it's a movie where I'd enjoy it more if Roland Emmerich wasn't being such a fucking dickhead. Let's just go to the next movie, which is more fun to review. But before that, 100%, let's talk about Napjitsu. Are you looking for a healthier energy option to help you power through that 2 p.m. feeling? Well, ditch that sugary crap. Napjitsu has natural time-release nootropics that help keep you energized and focused for hours without the crash. Napjitsu gives you brain-boosting nootropics to help unlock steady energy and focus right when you need it. The result? Your peak performance all day long. Napjitsu now offers 13 powerful, natural, brain-enhancing nootropics. That's good for you because nootropics boost cognitive function, memory, focus, creativity, and more. Their patent-pending Now capsules have natural ingredients like B vitamins, ginseng, glutamine, and more. And in other words, just more than caffeine. Napjitsu Now gives you 6+ hours of energy, time-released in 3 doses so you don't crash. Their energy supplements come in convenient small packets as well, so you can take them with you, unlocking sustained energy boosts right when you need it. Whether you want to power up your early morning workout, snap out of your post-lunch work funk, or fuel that late-night gaming sesh, which, by the way, I just got Dying Light 2. Definitely going to need this for that. Napjitsu has got you with the Now Energy Capsules. For a limited time, receive 30% off your first purchase when you go to napjitsu.com/LCB. Go to napjitsu.com/LCB for 30% off your first purchase today. That's napjitsu.com/LCB. Thank you, Napjitsu. Let's talk about Jackass Forever. I do have a lot to say about it, but I also don't have a lot to say about it. So, Chris, just tell me first what you thought.
This is going to shock people. I think this is going to make my top 10 list at the end of the year. This movie might be the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen. Like, I was, and for the record, I like Jackass a lot. Now, I've only seen the first two movies came out in what, 2002, 2006. I mean, I was a young lad. I never really got around to seeing, but I've seen pretty much every episode of the show. I love the third movie, and this had me laughing in a way that movies just don't make me laugh. I would say the last time I laughed this hard at a movie theater was This Is the End, which was 9 years ago. My favorite comedies, like of recent memory, I usually get like 3 to 5 really hard laughs in like, say, a 2-hour movie. The Silence of the Lambs bit, which is like the second bit they do, got about 5 or 6 in about 8 minutes. I mean, this thing, if you are a fan of Jackass, I think you will adore this and think it's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. Now, it is an acquired taste. I am stunned this wasn't NC-17.
Yeah.
Like, there is so much penis in this fucking movie.
A lot of penis.
There's just a cornucopia of fucking penises throughout this entire thing. And it's funny as shit. It's well done. I'll talk a little bit more. My rating is about a 91. Like, I really do love the shit out of this. I think it's not high art, right? But you got to judge it on its own merits. Like, mm-hmm. to me, it hits its bullseye. I thought it was hysterically funny. I thought this was just awesome. I'll talk a little bit more, you know, when we go back and forth about like something about Jackass has weirdly become artful, which is hard to explain. Like, and I'll talk about it in a second. But yeah, I'm really glad this did well. I'll say this. I hope this is the last one with this crew. Like, they were almost reaching the point with this one where it almost became disheartening. And there was those, like, Johnny Knoxville, like, lost cognitive function, like, during one of the rounds of this movie. Spoiler alert, the bull scene, like, he really fucked him up. And they show that in the movie. Like, he's not doing well. I think if they make another one with this crew, you're reaching the point of being like, one of these guys will die doing this. Mm. And like, I don't want to see that. But in terms of this movie, this hour, 40-minute film, goddamn, they do everything. Like, this thing made me laugh so hard, man. Like, I would actually, I never say this. I would actually see this again, like, at full price. That's how much I enjoyed this. And that's so rare. I know I'm a snob, but for as juvenile as it is, it's kind of close to perfect, in my opinion, for what it's trying to be.
Not to disappoint you, but Tremaine and Pontius said that Jackass 4.5 is supposed to happen and be on Netflix.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's like a DLC to me for a video game.
Yeah.
I don't really put that as like the next movie, but I'm sure there's more footage that was cut. It's just the passage of time is what bothers me. It's like, even throughout this movie, Johnny Knoxville goes from having regular like black hair to gray hair. Like, I worry about 60-year-old Johnny Knoxville doing this and being like, goddamn, like, you're really going to kill yourself. It's just, I think that this is kind of like the last stand for this current crew. If they want to do it with another group of guys, you're welcome to go ahead. I don't know if they'll be able to recapture that magic, but I thought this was hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I agree with a lot of what you said. I ended up with it on a 74 out of 100. And I think I had a lot of hesitation going into this movie, just because like the age, right? Like, a lot of the cast is just aged up, and Jackass was like a very influential part of my childhood. Like, me and my brothers and my friends, we try to do Jackass stunts in our backyard. It was like the first rated R movie I'd ever seen was Jackass number 2. I went with like my friends and my mom, and my mom had to stay in the theater and chaperone us because they wouldn't let us stay alone, even though she had been there when we bought the ticket. And I think that having that sort of connection with these guys just kind of made me afraid that I would feel like sad seeing them this much older, trying to like recapture what made them all famous when they were younger. But like, I feel like after the first 5 minutes, that kind of goes right out the window, and like, it's like they jump straight into it, and like, you don't really have a second to stop and think about that, which I think was really, really smart on their part. And I think there's like, I would put, say, three really positive things I have to say about this movie. First is that, like, the stunts or bits, whatever you want to call it, like, they were great. I think there were a few really ones I really, really liked. I think the one I liked the most, though, was the cup test with where they, and I think that's because they have all those cameos in there. We have Naganu punching the shit out of his nuts. They have O'Toole with the softball, PK Subban with the fucking puck, like, and what's his name puking into the mask. I thought was very, very funny.
Yeah, Lance, like, that was was turned into a running bit with him.
Yep.
Would you agree with me that for whatever reason, maybe this guy pissed off the cast, Aaron took a fucking beating,
man.
Like, of all of, and I know Knoxville probably had the worst injury with the bowl skip, but like, Aaron's testicles must be dissolved at this point. Like, that, like, he just gets destroyed and nearly gets his ass eaten by a fucking bear in the third act. Like, I don't know what happened, but he got just demolished in this movie, dude.
He definitely took, I think, the worst, like, hits per bit. Like, I feel like everything involved him mostly taking some massive hit. I think another great thing about this is it's just really fun to watch. It's pure fun, right?
Yeah.
I think that we, as an audience, it felt like we are part of this reunion of best friends. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a level of, like, a heartwarming element that cuts through the craziness of the show in a good way, right? Like it is really fun seeing them, like, fuck themselves up and all that, which is always a great thing about Jackass. But, like, also that, like, there's a legit feel of, like, family and friendship and, like, all that shit. And that way it cuts through and, like, makes me happy when I'm watching this show. I'm like, it's so cool seeing these guys together again and doing this crazy shit and being all together again for the first time that I'd seen in a long time. And I think that there is something really positive to say about that. And I think the last thing I would note is that you may not notice it when you watch the movie, but just, like, they started filming this right before COVID.
Yeah.
They had to stop filming from February to September in 2020. And that, to, like, kind of jump into that chemistry again and then have to cut it all short and then come back to it again, they must have been hard, but I think they did. They executed it flawlessly because, like, it doesn't really miss a beat at all. You don't really notice much other than the hair, which Johnny Knoxville had a really cool interview about, like, all the licks he took during Jackass and, like, how he just stopped dyeing his hair because he's like, I don't give a shit anymore. I'm going to go gray. And I think it was really, really just fun. And I don't know what else to say about it other than I think it's the best Jackass movie. And I think that maybe you could say, like, you could argue whatever you want about the other Jackass movies having better stunts, having more craziness or whatever, having more nostalgic value. I think for what this movie was to come and do this late and to be not only just as funny as far as, like, the actual the joke, what would you actually call them? They're not jokes or bits, but, like, stunts, I guess.
I would say stunts to me is the word. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, so
they're stunts and pranks. I mean, because there are pranks, like, you know, the old grandpa stuff, like, kind of inserted. So yeah, it's a stunt based movie, I would say.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that it gives you a couple things, like, and the stunts I would say are, like, pretty much as good as they were in all the previous movies and in the show. But also it has that added element of, like, just sort of like a familial bit. It's like it's so cool seeing them back together again. That really did make me happy. And, like, fucking laughing and watching fucking Preston's, like, ass, like, him shitting himself, like, and again Lance puking into his mask, like, dude, like, I'm dying laughing at this shit. It's so funny.
It's you know, I'm giving Johnny Knoxville shit for the hairstyle. Johnny Knoxville seems like one of the most likable, like, people around, like, just seems like a genuine sweet guy. But no, one thing I wanted to point out is the stunts themselves are bizarrely well done. Like, the opening scene, and I know this sounds so crazy because Chris Pontius's penis is dressed up like Godzilla, right? Like, I'm not saying it's high art, but, like, that scene taking the insane, like, juvenileness out of it, it's like a really well done opening where, like, the use of miniatures and forced perspective and the way it cuts back and forth between, like, the ground level footage and, like, the miniature footage. And obviously, like, it's, you know, his balls are painted, like, it's silly, but this movie is oddly very well directed and edited for a movie that is, you know, about guys who get punched in the balls and, you know, kicked in the dick and punched in the face. Like, there is something strangely bizarre in how, I don't know. Like, I said this in my YouTube review, but I really think these guys are, like, the modern day Three Stooges and the way that they, like, artfully use physical comedy just to make you laugh. I think it's brilliant. I adored this, man. I expected to like it just because I like these guys. I like them in the way I like the Impractical Jokers, where they're a bunch of friends who just get off on treating each other like garbage. I mean, and doing horrible things to each other. And yet at the end of the day, each one of them is laughing their asses off at the other. Like, there is something strangely like charming and heartwarming about that, which is weird because these guys like are basically killing themselves.
Yeah.
And yet you get a legitimate enjoyment out of it. And I'll say this, the new people were not a distraction. And I actually thought like who the big, like, I think Zach Wells is maybe the name of, like,
yeah,
that guy was funny as fuck, dude. Like, everyone is incorporated really well into this cast. Surprising flick, man. I probably look like a crazy person, but I enjoyed the absolute hell out of this. It made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, no, and I think that what you said too about laughing in a theater is so correct, because like there really hasn't been a ton of really, really funny laugh out loud comedies that have come out in a theater in a long time. And like we talk about this with like an LCB all the time, just like how there's just kind of a drought with that. Like, this movie is going to make you laugh. Like, it's probably going to make you laugh more than any movie you've seen in a long time. And it's probably going to make you wince a lot, probably going to make you grimace. Like, wow, I just saw this guy's nuts get, you know, pummeled by a mini punching machine in like 1,000 frames per second. Like, it's crazy. You're going to see dicks. You're going to see like poop. You're going to see all this shit. Like, no pun intended, but like, it's, you're going to see a lot of very funny stuff and like laugh out loud like crazy. I think this is a movie too. Like, I just saw it myself, but like, I think it's a movie. If I went to see this with like a group of my friends, like, we would be having the time of our goddamn lives watching this movie. And that's like a big, I think like a notch for them, because like, it does give you that feeling again of friendship, funniness. Like, you get to see all these other people get involved in it too, which is always fun. Like Eric Andre obviously has a connection with John Tremaine now, because like they did what was it, Bad Trip?
Yeah,
Tremaine. Sorry. They did Bad Trip together, and like seeing him on there getting the sock on the fucking trying to get his drink, very funny. And all the other guys too, like Tyler Creator on here, like again with all the people, all the athletes we saw in that one, Tony Hawk in the beginning, so fucking funny out of nowhere. Like all these guys, man, it really. I think just impressed me and how everything just kind of felt like it fell back into place really easily. Cause it's not like we, and I think we feel like we've talked about it, especially when we did Multiverse, like Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, like trying to fall back into the roles and that being seamless.
Mm-hmm.
That had to be a trillion times easier for them than it was for the Jackass guys to come back and do this shit.
Yeah. Cause these guys are really hurt. Yeah. Guys, yeah. The other thing too, is when it's not making you laugh, there are actual like tense moments like that, just like the spider, like the tarantula scene, you know, that's in the trailer. Like there are those, the bear scene is another example. Like the bear scene is very funny, but there is a moment where it's like this guy might get a limb ripped off and it wouldn't shock me. Like these guys are crazy enough to put their friends through such torture where somebody like may not have all their digits intact by the end of this sketch. Like there is actual tension to this thing, which is why it works in a lot of ways better than a lot of narrative movies do, because it brings emotions out of you that a lot of other movies just don't.
Yeah. And part of that, just it being real, it kind of really adds on to that. And, you know, it was another good one too, was the night visions part where they're like coming around with, like the cattle prods and shit. That was, God.
That to me is the funniest bit of it, of the movie, is the Silence of the Lambs bit where they just keep going
over and over.
Like it's such a great setup. And then like with the second these guys think that they're away, they're running into pans and falling into like, you know, thumbtacks. I think Johnny Knoxville and or Steve, I can't remember who it was, said in an interview, they believe that's the best sketch they've ever done. And I believe it, to me, it's like the ultimate Jackass sketch. So I thought, it's just an awesome, awesome movie.
So many great moments. And also another great moment in this was just sort of ending on a tribute to Ryan Dunn.
Yeah.
Who, obviously passed away. I thought that was really nice too. Good little finishing touch.
Now it's clear that these guys like have an honest to God friendship with each other. And, you know, obviously, man, Ryan Dunn, I didn't even realize that Ryan Dunn died like almost 10 years ago now. Cause I remember there was that very controversial moment where Amy Schumer made that joke at, I can't remember whose roast it was.
Yeah.
But that was, it might have been Trump's. I could be wrong, but that was like a decade ago. And so just the fact that, you know, they came back around and, you know, gave him a little tribute. That was, and it, again, another praise to this movie. I stayed through the credits. Haven't done that for a movie outside of a Marvel movie. Have not done that for a movie in a really long time. So good on it, man. I'm glad this thing worked and it did really well. And I think it's probably going to have some repeat business as well with people trying to see this with friends. I'm glad it's hitting with people, because it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And that's one of those where, like, if you're looking for a movie to watch, like, this would be the one I would recommend. I wouldn't recommend Moonfall or really, like, getting Spider-Man still out in through theaters. I would recommend this over almost all of those because, like, it, just from a pure enjoyment factor, it's going to be up there. Like, you're seeing people get their fucking nuts punched is funny. I'm sorry. Fucking sue me. We're turning into idiocracy society. I don't care. It's funny. But
these guys, there's just a way they make it. Like, there's a moment in the cup check scene where the pogo stick, where Wee Man just goes, he's bleeding out of his nuts. And I just start, like, there's something so, I know the way we talk about it, it sounds so ridiculous, but the way they say it, the way they go about it, they are so infectious with the way that they talk about their friends and the way they talk about that these people's pain that you really just get wrapped up in it. And I, you know, I have to say for the record, like I brought it up earlier, like this is very much an acquired taste. In fact, when I saw this movie and I saw it in a, you know, a podunk theater in Lansing, one person did walk out. Like there will be those moments where it's like, you know, if you're not into this kind of humor, then it's just not going to work. So if somebody came back from this and said, this is awful and unfunny, sure. But you know, I find people like, I find a swarm of bees on somebody's dick for like 10 minutes to be very funny. If you don't, that's fine. But I think if you're into it, you're going to adore this. I think it's the best one they've done.
Yeah. Just be prepared to see a lot of dicks and don't.
There's a lot of penises.
If you're an under 18 member listening right now and you want to go see it with your mom, like I did with Jackass number 2, this is not the one to watch.
No.
If Jackass 2 does a rewatch or theatrical run, go do that instead. No. But yeah, no, that's Jackass Forever. Okay, so then it's also the end of the episode. So we will have Jeff back next Sunday. We'll also have an episode of The Bracket, I believe. We might be taking a week break because of the Super Bowl week. We have a lot of crazy stuff going on. I'm not sure. But we'll figure it out. We'll be back with the full crew at the very least next Sunday. But until then, I'm Ken Jack. That's Chris. And...